providing real solutions for real industry challenges. Welcome to FNF Unplugged, the talk of the title industry.
Costa, thanks so much for joining us here today to talk about technological change in the title and settlement business and things that you're involved in and what you see as far as where 2020 has taken us and where 2021 is going to take us. One question when we do these podcasts that we generally ask is that, our common experience that very few of us, when we were 6 years old, were asked by our first grade teacher, what do you want to do when you grow up? And our answer was, I want to be in the title and settlement business. And so all that being said, Costa, can you give us sort of just a background as to what brought you into this particular line of work?
Well, first of all, Chuck, I can't tell you how excited I am to be part of this podcast, having been a partner and in front of Fidelity's for so many years, more years than I care to actually admit. But you are right. Growing up, it was really between fighter jet pilots and title and settlement services for me. Unfortunately for me, my father was really anti his kids going into the armed services. And we fought for some time on that. But so, yeah, so here I am. It's sort of been an interesting journey. I'm a former scientist, or I guess I'm a scientist that ended up in title and settlement because I got out of law school at a really interesting time thinking I was going to go into biotech and pharma. And intellectual property, the dot-com bubble burst, and had to quickly reinvent myself. And like everybody else, as you so eloquently stated it, ended up in title and settlement.
Well, and I hear you because at one point I was going to become an environmental attorney. And then I quickly realized that the way to do that was to, first of all, work for the government. And I didn't want to do that. So all that being said, and that background, when you're coming out of title and settlement and you've been very much involved with technology, as you say, you really were a scientist, and an awful lot of people, I think now in our industry, really were tied to technology. And then they got involved with title and settlement through technology as versus being in title and settlement and then coming to technology. And that being said, you've created a company called Stavvy, and what prompted you? What did you see in the marketplace that needed to be addressed that drove you to this, besides obviously your aptitude?
You know, it's interesting. So when as we were scaling our title and settlement operations, both the law firm up in the Northeast and title and settlement operations in other states, I started to really, look at what the future looked like. And I knew that, we had leveraged a tremendous amount of resources internally to build infrastructure and technology to connect some of the various platforms that we were using in our operations. And so I spent several years on a bit of an M&A journey. I acquired a bunch of title operations in various jurisdictions. We continued to expand. And for me, it was an inflection point where I really wanted to sort of step back and try to figure out what was next for the companies, thinking that the best sort of course of action would be to expose myself to people outside of the industry and see what has worked in other industries. I thought about maybe taking a sabbatical. I was doing some consulting for some companies and maybe expanding my consulting business for a little bit. But my journey led me to business school, and I spent 2 years, and it was one of the most profound experiences really of my professional career, being exposed to people from different industries. It was at that moment that I sort of realized, being ingrained in the innovation ecosystem here in Boston and in Cambridge, that what I really wanted to do was create impact for the industry as a whole and not just for our organizations. And what led me to that was really looking at the way we transact real estate, the way we transact consumer lending, even commercial lending as it relates to real estate transactions. What I knew was that in the next 10 years or so, it would look very different. Now, of course, we are an industry that is, resistant sometimes to change. And part of that is voluntary, but part of it is also involuntary. And what I mean by that is we sense sometimes the change could be threatening, and we try to resist that type of change. And then the involuntary piece is there is a tremendous amount of fragmentation. And sometimes the left hand doesn't speak to the right hand, and it gets difficult to introduce new ways of doing things. And you hear a lot of, it's always been done this way, or why would I do it that way? And so I really wanted to be part of what that innovation look like, knowing that it's incremental, that we're not going to go from all paper and all, you know, phone and email and text message communications overnight to a fully digital platform experience. And it just, in the most simplistic way, it was a profound and powerful opportunity for me to step back and put myself in a position where I could have some hand or some say in terms of what that incremental change could look like. And that excited me.
Well, and that's very exciting, generally speaking, I think. And what you've discussed is certainly what we come to hear from, especially like the GSEs. I mean, we had Shane Hartzler on this podcast last month talking about the change and certainly the what I call the dynamic intersection of COVID and technology change that we had that began really at the end of the first and early second quarter last year certainly has moved things forward faster. Maybe not fast, but faster. What are your thoughts on that? Do you see as far as those technology changes, again, do you see them as fast or faster, especially in light of what we've gone through the last few months?
I think that it would be fair to categorize it as faster. You know, I think if you actually really look and if you get into the, you know, if you get granular and you look at the amount of real estate transactions that have gone fully digital. And what I mean by that is putting aside the noise, right? Putting aside the, oh, year over year percentage increase, that means nothing to me, right? I mean, getting down to the nitty gritty, if you were doing 10 transactions a month digitally and you want to announce that you're up 300%, that's wonderful, but you're still only doing 30. And when you know, the denominator and the denominator there, you know, when you do the math, we're still just scratching the surface of where we're going. I think it's an interesting time. We are certainly at a place where we know the vulnerability and the exposure that this industry had to a pandemic like COVID. It would be naive for us to ever think that we're going back to a world where we're not going to leverage technology and software, right? As Andreessen Horowitz puts it, software is eating the world, and it becomes very difficult to persuade anybody that looks at the processes and what we do, that leveraging technology, especially software, to be able to do some of the very repetitious things that we're still doing manually, that we, you know, it's a very weak argument to say that we're going back to the way it was. But I do think it's faster. I don't think that we have hit that, you know, delta V where the change in velocity is so extreme that everyone needs to buckle up. There are so many stakeholders that need to move to a place of open-mindedness, adoption, working with fintechs, collaborating across industries and across verticals and across platforms.
Well, and I think, you know, your point is so well made. What we've seen for so many years, I mean, this goes back 10, 12, 15 years ago, just the issue of rekeying the same information over and over again into different systems, the cost of doing that, and then, of course, the quality control problems that creates to do that and to have that sort of integration where once data is input, it's maintained. I know that, you know, in you know, your historic marketplace there in Massachusetts and in New England, lenders tend to be, there are the large national lenders, obviously, they're very active, but there's a tremendous number of smaller and mid-sized lenders that could be styled either regional, but more likely community banks, credit unions, and so forth. You know, what are your thoughts about working with them and some of the challenges that they face because they don't have the resources that some of the large national lenders have or the most of the large national lenders have? What do you see as far as that opportunity and how do you see that moving forward as far as their technological capabilities and needs?
It's a great question. And what's really interesting is when we started on this journey at Stavi, we were, you know, really excited at the prospect that, as you've keenly identified, especially in New England, but frankly, when you really look at the landscape on the origination side, two out of three transactions don't originate with one of the big lenders. And so cumulatively, the market opportunity is massive, right? And so when you look at, and I don't want to be held to this number, but it's going to be accurate within probably one percentage point or so standard deviation. But, you know, Quicken Loans, about 10% national market share, more or less. I mean, Chuck, it's definitely between 9 and 11%. Maybe right. It's a little higher this year. When you look at something like that and you compare it to other industries in terms of a major incumbent player in that space, that's a very low number when it comes to the amount of market share that they're able to absorb. And so, you know, looking at these smaller lenders, looking at regional lenders, looking at credit unions that originate a tremendous amount of the mortgages in this country, it was really interesting to us because the initial, I think, common sense reaction is this is awesome. They're not going to build their own technology. And that is true. What we're finding, and this is, I think, this is evident not only as a direct result of COVID, which is COVID, in my opinion, for our industry has been a double-edged sword. And what I mean by that is what we're building at Stavi and what others, some other great technology companies that are building some really great technology in the space has never been more relevant. It's clear that everything that we are building is the direction that we're moving into. However, you're asking some of these smaller lenders that are dealing with absolutely historically low interest rates on top of trying to serve their local business communities processing PPP loans, on top of modifying commercial loans, on top of perhaps putting loans into forbearance in light of COVID. There's such a tremendous amount of activity for the banking sector. Stress testing, being prepared for the worst case scenario in light of COVID, and all these things that being able to stop, pause, and give yourself the tools and the power to make yourself more productive, decrease the costs associated with originating a loan to help with those margins is the second, you know, the second side of that double-edged sword, right? And I think what we're finding is that the larger banks, regional banks, that are or lenders, and I don't, you know, when I say bank and I say lender in our world, it's, you know, fairly the same. What we're finding is the larger organizations that have resources available for innovation or business transformation units, or the ones that have leadership that don't necessarily have those types of roles identified within the organization, but have leadership that know for a fact that in the next 5 to 10 years, the way that our customers or their customers will interact with them will be profoundly different. There's never a great time to put a new piece of technology into a really busy moving machinery, but it's one of those instances where you have to sort of pause and reflect on what do you need to be doing? Who do you need to align yourself with as a technology partner to be able to deliver that type of experience that the customers not only want, but arguably the next wave of home buyers will expect.
And I think that's all incredibly powerful to think about that. You know, as you and I have discussed, and as we know, you know, the MBA rolls out numbers as to the profitability of origination of mortgage loans. And going back a few months ago, it was costing $9,000 to originate a mortgage loan, and lenders were clearing a couple of $100s. Out of that $9,000. Now there's about a $7,000. The profitability has improved dramatically for a number of reasons. Refinances generally cost less to originate than purchase transactions for most lenders. But maintaining that profitability, as you say, they're challenged because in the midst of all this other business that, you know, we in our title and settlement industry, we tend to heavily focus on residential, is that they've got these problems with commercial. They've got these problems in other areas, and they're trying to overcome those problems and trying to fix a tire on a car that's moving. When talking to mid-sized lenders, bank and non-bank lenders who are challenged by this, you know, what is that sort of opening conversation? How do you approach it with them? And what sort of upfront information do you try to get when you're talking to a lender about how to help them with their technological issues that can help make them more profitable or at least maintain some profit margins?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, it's interesting because I talk to a lot of founders and some of my students, and one of the things that's really interesting is that there is in the sales process, there is emotion involved and there's also, you know, rationality involved. And the sales cycle starts very emotional. It goes into rational and then it goes back into emotional. And I think what's interesting is what we have learned, first and foremost is you have to be able to identify where the pain point is. If you are, when you're looking at organizations and being able to partner with them and empower them, it's all about finding where there is pain, where there is bottleneck. And so what we learned early on was we knew that first and foremost, at our core, at our genesis, we are not a service provider, right? And so Stabby provides technology that empowers the existing stakeholders. And that was something that that we were very passionate about from the beginning. We don't have notaries on staff that perform remote notarization. We empower the title and settlement companies that use us to be able to use their own staff or external operations or notaries that they've used traditionally. And so we basically look at ourselves as we just provide you the technology to be able to move into digital transformation. And I say that because what's really interesting is when we're talking to these lenders and finding these pain points, it's what you identified earlier, that on an average transaction, I believe, and I don't even know how much this has changed, I hope it's gotten better, but a couple of years ago, on an average residential transaction, the borrower and or purchaser's name and the property address were entered about 27 times manually from inception of offer all the way through the sale of the loan into the secondary mortgage market and aggregators and so on and so forth. So when you think about that, and the fact that in 2020, even if that number has now gone down to 20 or 15, it's 14 times too many. And so we look for these pain points in terms of how can we help you with the margins? And how do we show you the value that the platform provides you? And we built an ROI calculator. We look at the amount of time that our customers spend on average across the lending team, chasing deliverables, following up on messages, looking for a title commitment that was already sent to them weeks ago, asking for scheduling information, sending back a clear to close. All of these little pieces, when you put them together on average, there is a tremendous cost in aggregate to these lenders. And so when you show them that, we look for what is the average salary across the board of the lending team. We have a data collection form where we collect all of these various manual tasks that are being done by the lending team now that we automate or help automate. We put those together with a number of transactions on average that the lender is doing, and we're able to generate an annual ROI on their investment.
Well, that's incredibly powerful when you're talking to a customer and you're demonstrating to them how you can help them make money. That's where you win in the first round. And on the other side, obviously, in title and settlement, what are some of the benefits there, obviously, as to, some cost reduction, as to some QC and communication items? What do you see on our side of the aisle as to when lenders adopt these types of programs and programs like Stabby?
Yeah, so I think a couple things. What we're seeing is on the agency side of operations, if you have an agent, and I don't want to necessarily pick on any particular state, but let's pick on Florida because a lot of people pick on Florida. But let's say that you've got an agent in South Florida that's traditionally really done 90% of their business in South Florida. Remote technology now empowers them to become a statewide agent for you at scale. Because if they can cover transactions from a closing center, anywhere really in the state, that means that if the transaction is moving digital and going remote, they can do closings in the Panhandle, they can do closings up in Jacksonville, they can do closings in Tampa, and they don't really necessarily have to worry about any of the latency in terms of, sending somebody from the organization out to cover the transaction, or worse, potentially farming out the actual closing experience to somebody locally that may or may not represent the service or the quality or the expectations that you have set for your clients and customers. And so it's one sort of example of what I think technology is able to do, is empower agents to be able to move within their, their current states and framework, but also potentially expand into more states. And so I think that's it's a profound opportunity especially for agencies that are regional or localized. On the national scale, really, we're talking about minimizing chain of custody surrounding documents, giving customers an opportunity to really better understand what they're signing because we're putting documents into their hands sooner, empowering them with the ability to have non-repudiation, right? We have, it's interesting, I was chatting with somebody who used to be on the legal team of one of the largest banks in the country. And I remember, going through sort of our audit log workflow and the retention of the video files. And he looked at me and he said to me, if only I had this technology after the housing crisis in 2007 and 2008, when I was challenging judicial foreclosures all over the country. we're talking about some really profound and interesting and powerful stuff there. And so I think, on the title side, even really just being able to, what we're working on right now with one of the regional underwriters is turning around the policy and the electronic remittance of the premium within days after a transaction, so that, you know, underwriters are not chasing their money or worried about the exposure associated with that. And they're getting both the policy remitted. Really, in our R&D, what we're working on now is we're trying to get to a place where we can help the agent turn a policy around right after recording.
Well, that's hugely helpful. And I think, too, as you're discussing, you know, that expansion, our industry, and as we've been sort of alluding to it through this conversation, we are often accused, perhaps rightly so, as an industry with our feet firmly planted in the 18th century. And while we certainly have done a lot of work here in this last year as far as being flexible to get transactions closed, there still is a great deal of that. And gee whiz, are we going to go back to those halcyon days of pre-COVID, which weren't so halcyon to begin with. And I think, too, you know, what you're talking about in regard to both the title and settlement side and the lending side, you know, the QC and the post-closing quality control, which we see more and more lenders driving towards real-time QC through the loan application and consummation and disbursement process. If you could talk about that a little bit, too, because that's certainly those, quote, redos or having to reopen a file to get a document signed again because someone didn't sign their middle initial. Now, how do these type of technology changes help ameliorate all that?
It's a big issue, right? And I think when you actually spend some time talking to people on the lending team that really understand the impact of having to chase trailing documents, re-execute documents, that have dealt with indemnifications in the secondary mortgage market or buyback of loans or fines associated with not having documents that need to go back to the lender, it's a big issue. And I think we're starting to move into a direction where technology can start solving for some of that. I think, you know, one of the interesting things is, you know, obviously there's a tremendous amount of attention buzzwords around artificial intelligence and how machine learning can really help with that. And the same applies, by the way, on the front end, which is the ingestion of loan documents into a platform so that somebody isn't manually annotating every little spot that needs a signature or an initial. Because frankly, that's really no different than what we do today. You can easily miss an annotation and you're back to, you know, back to dealing with the same types of post-closing issues. I think that programmatically addressing quality control is certainly in the horizon over the course of the next several years. Machine learning, artificial intelligence, it gets better and better the more it processes. Obviously, I think that there is a very compelling interest in having technology do that as opposed to having people do it. First of all, scale. Second of all, cost. Exposure of non-public information to the third parties. And, you know, where do you outsource that type of work to? It also allows lenders to be very, you know, agile and be able to scale in times of lower interest rates. Or higher interest rates to be able to, you know, to be able to plan accordingly for their lending teams and not necessarily have to worry about some of that. But again, one of the challenges really becomes that on the front end, on the origination side, and even at the warehouse level, there is a lot of interest, I think, in adopting technology. But one of the challenges, I think, in terms of, you know, broad adoption, when you look at why are we still dealing with such tiny percentage of transactions, you know, I think in November of this year, full digital transactions with e-notes, 0.8% of the transactions in this country in the middle of a global pandemic. Well, why? It's not a shortage of interest on the borrower side, but when you really dissect the life cycle of a loan and what happens to it and how it passes from originator and how there's all these various stakeholders that have interest throughout the life cycle, warehouse lenders, servicers, subservicers, aggregators, the ultimate investors. When you look at that entire life cycle, a lot of the companies right now are really focused on the technology and innovation on the front end, the customer experience on the origination side. But the rest of this stack of shareholders needs to also come along for this innovation ride. And it isn't until we get to a place where this entire group of stakeholders moves towards digital transformation where we can really leverage the power of technology to be able to post-close a file, audit a file, move the critical assets or artifacts between relevant stakeholders along that chain.
And I'm reminded I was on a webinar back in the spring with the Honorable Joe Muren. Of course, you know, Joe ran Ginnie Mae for a number of years. And Joe's comment, and I'll quote him so no one will view me as a lightning rod, that when mortgage lenders talked about technological change, he said 95% of that technological change came in origination, not in operations. And again, going into COVID, he said, yeah, everybody had a pandemic plan. Nobody had a pandemic infrastructure. That point really resonated. And I think it's just what you're discussing is that when lenders talk about improved technological changes, quite often it is that customer facing technological change. But on the back end, they're still sort of making the widgets the same way they made them 10 years ago.
I'm glad that somebody like Joe, somebody smarter than me, has identified, you know, sort of the same thing that I'm trying to articulate.
You know, everybody can watch Domino's making the pizza, but meanwhile, they're still making pizzas the same way they were making pizzas 100 years ago. And, you know, are they getting them out faster? So it certainly is a challenging time. As a side jest, I've heard several people say, well, artificial intelligence is all in vogue right now because there's so little genuine intelligence. What sort of a wrap up comment, you know, what are your thoughts here as to, you know, the move forward 3 to 6 months from now and maybe even a year or two from now for title agents and utilizing the kind of technology that you have developed?
Thanks, Chuck. Yeah. So first of all, I love having these conversations and I'm excited to have future conversations with you and the rest of the team. I think that, you know, if I want to sort of close up, you know, in summary, some of the things that are going on in my mind in terms of what's happening over the course of the next, you know, couple of quarters and in the short term, you know, horizon. The first is I talk often about a term that I've coined, responsible innovation. And, you know, we're really focused at Stavvy around building technology that builds all these types of efficiencies. But it's also really important to note that we have to be responsible with respect to the technology and the innovation that we bring into the industry. And so when I talk about that, I talk really passionately about a couple things. One, making sure that none of the technology that we build creates any new or additional barriers to entry for underserved or underrepresented communities that have traditionally struggled to find credit or even banking and financial services. And I'm not talking about just in the U.S., but sort of, you know, globally and speaking from a large perspective. I think it's really important that we're really cognizant and careful that everything that we deploy and build is for the greater good. And we can do that. We can do this in such a way where we're not building technology that creates impediments around being able to help people access credit, buy homes, save for homes, understand the transactions that they're contemplating. I think it's really, really important. And I think it's something that we really can't lose focus in sight of. And in fact, every time we're talking about new features and new rollouts and new products, you know, I know that there's a couple of urban legends. I don't know if it's true or not that Amazon has an empty seat in rooms that's supposed to represent the customer. It's something that we try to be very mindful of: is how does this in practice impact the consumer and people in general? The second thing is, it's so important for all of the legacy companies, whether it's large title insurance companies, whether it's large servicers, whether it's the large originators and large banks, to really appreciate the value of fintechs and partnering with fintechs. This is not the time to put resistance up. This is not the time to continue to build walled gardens around what you think are certain competitive advantages. You will lose 10 times out of 10. Smaller companies are agile. They can build faster. They can move quicker. And as a result of that, you know, I think it's interesting. You probably saw that Jamie Dimon earlier in the week was asked if larger banks like JP Morgan should be worried about fintechs. And, you know, his response was profound. He said that we should be scared blankless, right? Like, so, if somebody like Jamie Dimon is able to recognize the speed and the agility of fintechs and what that means, I think we've just started to see the beginning of situations where you see fintechs acquiring lenders or fintechs acquiring banks, and not necessarily what we've been used to seeing, which is banks acquiring fintech companies. I think we saw last year with the first acquisition when Radius Bank here in Boston was acquired by a lending club on the West Coast. I think you'll continue to see more of that type of activity. And so I think that the future is bright, but the future requires partnerships and sort of, you know, taking down some of these walled gardens and looking at how we can work together, because fragmentation is a loss for everybody, including and, of course, especially the customer.
Well, and Costa, I'll tell you, just, you know, in those wrap up comments, I think we have something to talk about here in the upcoming months, because just what you're describing, that, you know, this, you know, disruption is a very generalized term, but the disruption in the real estate industry, and I mean that across the board, whether you're talking about realty, lending, title settlement, any of the support operations that are provided to any and all of those things, we are seeing dramatic changes and dramatic differences. And I think your point too about underserved communities, with the incoming administration, we are certainly going to see, I think, a higher focus on underserved communities. And we've seen MBA and other organizations really start to focus on this, because it's the issue is, well, okay, if we can close a real estate transaction on somebody's computer, what happens if they don't have a computer? So I think we have enough for another podcast, Costa, if you might be available here in the next upcoming weeks.
Absolutely. It's something I would love to follow up on. We're really passionate about it. I got to tell you that I'm so proud of my co-founder and my team for recognizing that value. There's no secret that we are deploying our technology right now on servicing. We're giving lenders the power to be able to modify loans so that people can do it from the comfort of their home and the safety of their home during this pandemic. Not everyone is blessed with the ability to be able to stop in the middle of the day and take a package, go find a notary, execute it, and be able to return it to a FedEx location. And so the fact that, you know, we're deploying technology that can help people stay in their homes and modify their mortgages safely without interrupting their ability to work is something that we're so proud of and so passionate that we've built out a segment and a team to just work on servicing at Stavi.
Well, Costa, again, thank you so much for joining us today. I think this has been a very useful and powerful conversation for title and settlement agents, but also for the real estate industry. So we get pretty good listening audience from outside title and settlement. I hope more and more listen, particularly to your comments today. So again, thank you so much for being with us.
Chuck, grateful for you and your partnership with us, and wishing you all the best. Thank you. Looking forward to our next chat.
If you have questions, comments, or would like us to feature a specific topic, email fnfeducation@fnf.com. Thanks for downloading FNF Unplugged, a presentation of the FNF family of companies. All rights reserved. This podcast is being provided for informational purposes only. The podcast is not a comprehensive overview of the subject and is not intended to provide legal or financial advice or an endorsement of any product or business. The views expressed by podcast guests are their own, and their appearance on the podcast does not imply any endorsement of them or any entity they represent, including Fidelity National Financial or its directors. Please seek legal or financial advice before taking any action on the matters or products discussed herein.